Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't
Stepped on your locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Breaking ball, and that ball's hit well to left center field, sending Kipnis back to the track, and that is out of here. Left center field home run. Alex Bregman gives the Astros a 3-1 lead.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the mantra of Alex Bregman, former LSU star, as it was reported last night from our good friend Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle that the Astros have agreed to a 6-year, $100 million contract with the all-star third baseman and former LSU Tiger. That's right. Bregman is going to get a $100 million deal. Baseball is just handing out stupid money right now during this offseason. Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parks III, and you're listening to the Rap Game with RP3. We're broadcasting live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. Cody Schutz, good morning to you. My good brother, how are you this morning back there in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing?
I'm good to go, brother. I'm excited. I love it when I get to mash buttons like that early in the morning. So thank you, Alex Bregman and the Houston Astros, for that.
That's right. So Bregs gets his money. Chandler Rome, who's the Houston Astros beat writer, also tweeted out other news. In the addition of Alex Bregman, the all-star third baseman, former LSU Tiger, one of the more beloved recent LSU Tigers. Besides Bregman getting that 6-year, $100 million contract, he also reported yesterday, or rather last night, that the Astros gave Ryan Pressly a 2-year, $17.5 million extension as well. So the Astros had a total payroll of $163 million and some change last season. And this is from courtesy of Chandler. This evening, they spent $117.5 million on two contract extensions. This is the state of baseball. This is not a knock on Alex Bregman because he deserves to get his money. And if you're the Astros, this is a wise move. You lock him up. Because the bigger thing about this move is that it's essentially a 5-year, $100 million extension. Now, the new contract does not override Bregg's salary for this season, the 2019 season. But what it does do, it covers the 3 arbitration seasons, and which would have also covered his first 2 free agents seasons. And now, if you're the Astros, you have everyone locked up. You have Altuve, you have Correa, you have Bregs. You have everyone locked up for the next couple of years. Your kind of youngish nucleus, your guys that are in their 20s, mid-20s to maybe late 20s, you have all those guys locked up for at least a 3 to 4 year period, which means now you can focus on trying to make the run. The number one priority for the Stros is winning another World Series title. That front office, what they believe that they can do is win multiple World Series titles. And if you're going to do that in this day and age, you have to have a core group of guys locked up under contract. No worries about leaving. No worries about demanding trades. They've done that. I know they lost a few pieces this offseason. Absolutely. Every team does. But if you want to compete with the likes of the Boston Red Sox, who just won the World Series, and the Yankees, who are always apparently print money, then you're going to have to spend money. And that's what the Astros are doing. And the Astros are not spending lavish amounts of money on free agents. They're making smart moves in free agency. But more importantly, they're signing their guys. They're locking up their homegrown talent that they brought up through their farm system when the team struggled year after year. But they knew that the future was going to be bright, and sure enough, it paid off, and it paid off with a World Series championship. So locking up Alex Bregman is huge for the Astros. But, I mean, six-year, $100 million contract for Alex Bregman. And that's another thing for the Astros. They don't have to worry about Bregs going to arbitration. They don't have to worry about all that mess that involves agents and lawyers and everything else like that. No. They dole out what they need to do. Bregs gets his money. Everyone's happy. Okay? Everyone's taken care of. They don't have to worry about this anymore. They got their star third baseman, another cornerstone of that franchise. Like I said, they already have Altuve locked up. They have Carrera locked up. You know, they're going to have some pieces that are going to have to be moved and messed with moving forward with the pitching staff. We already know that. Their young core, their young nucleus is the guys in the field, the guys in the lineup, 1 through 9. They're going to have to get creative in the next few years to continue bringing back other guys, pitchers. You know, they did a smart thing 2 years ago midseason when they brought in Verlander, the multiple Cy Young winner from the Detroit Tigers, a.k.a. Mr. Kate Upton. They brought him in. He helped them get them over the hump, helped them lead, get them to a World Series title. Verlander's getting older. Modern Major League Baseball pitchers, they can pitch until their late 30s, into their early 40s, and still be can still be very effective. I don't want to say extremely effective. They can still be effective. But not only did they lock up Bregs yesterday, they also got Presley. Got him an extension. Don't have to worry about that. You know, they are doing the right moves that they need to do to keep this team going, to keep it as a contender year in, year out. Because that's the ultimate goal. When you do this, you don't want to be one of those one-off franchises that gets your World Championship and then never competes for another one, a la the Florida Marlins of old, where they bought up a bunch of players like Gary Sheffield and others and Fred McGriff, and they bring them all together to win a World Series title, and then as soon as the season's over, they don't even wait for the champagne to be mopped off the floor for winning a World Series championship before they start cutting guys and shipping guys off, okay? You don't want to do it that way. You want to have sustained success. You want to build up through your farm system and then add smart free agent moves like the Chicago Cubs have done under Theo Epstein, like the Houston Astros are doing currently right now, like the Boston Red Sox are doing once again. So you have all these teams that are kind of mirror images of one another. I know Boston has spent more in free agency. They always have. Once the arms race with the New York Yankees began there in the early 2000s, and it's never really kind of subsided there in the East Coast. The Yankees and Red Sox are always going to have, always going to try to one-up one another. So, you know, that's what they do, and they also try to build up through their farm system as well, of course. But the Astros are more like in the vein of what the Cubs have done. Astros and Cubs are very kind of mirror images of one another. They build up through their farm system. They are very sneaky when it comes to free agency. They sign good, they sign quality guys, but don't have to break the bank. They make some smart trades. But the Astros got their guy locked up, and they got two other guys locked up. But they weren't the only ones getting money. yesterday, ladies and gentlemen. I know this is Acadiana's a big Houston Astros area. But no one had a bigger day than Mike Trout, the five-tool player, the reincarnation, if you will, of Mickey Mantle, who plays for the Anaheim, California Angels of San Diego Credit Union. Their name is ridiculous, by the way. Why can't you just be Anaheim Angels? Just say you're Anaheim Angels. Why you have to be Anaheim of Los Angeles Angels? It's the stupidest thing. It's a totally different area. If you've ever been out there, I've been to Anaheim Park. I've been to that ballpark. I've been privileged to see a game there.
I've always been fond of the Disneyland Angels. We'll just go with that.
I like the old school California Angels where they used to have the halo on the uniform, Cody. Okay, I'll take it back that far.
Whatever they were called when Danny Glover was running the ship there in Angels, whatever the team name was then, that's what we're going with. A young Joseph Gordon-Levitt and a still sort of young Danny Glover, whatever the team name was during that time span.
Danny Glover was still old as hell.
He was. I was trying not to call him out, but he really was old in that movie.
He looked worn out from doing three Lethal Weapons by that time. So... And a Predator sequel. So
it could happen.
It could happen. But Mike Trout signs the richest contract in baseball history. That deal for Mike Trout is a 12-year, $430 million deal. 12 years, $430 million. We talked about this on this show when Manny Machado got his money, $300 million, and then Bryce Harper got his money, $330 million, right? And we talked about, you know, we played a lot of that 50 Cent clip when those contracts got played, when those contracts got released. There it is. But once again, Mike Trout proves that he's better than Bryce Harper in every possible way. He's a better player. He plays better defense. He's not a big pouty crybaby who throws his bat down. Okay, you know, he doesn't worry about what his hair looks like. Okay, I think he goes with like that, shaves the head and then has a little bit of a mohawk. He's a ball player, okay? And Bryce Harper gets his money, and he wants to be the king of all free agents, and he has to sign that ridiculous deal with the Philadelphia Phillies where he has no trade clause. He has to be stuck in Philly, so he gets $330 million. Mike Trout's like, oh, that's cute, bro. That's adorable. I'm going to stay in Anaheim. First of all, I get to stay in California where the weather is always perfect year-round. I get to play in Anaheim where no one really pays attention to me, so I have no pressure. Oh, and by the way, I got $430 million. $430 million. Trout, who's won two AL MVPs, and he's finished second four times, will receive an average of nearly $36 million per year. That tops Zach Greinke's previous record average of 34.4 mil with the Arizona Diamondbacks. The $430 million-plus total is more than 30% larger than the $330 million deal Bryce Harper just signed on March the 2nd. It also beats, according to ESPN, beats Canelo Alvarez's deal with DAZN by more than $65 million.
The zone.
Trout's only 27. He's only 27 years old. Now, this contract will lock him up. He will retire an Angel. Smart move by the Angels. They have enough money to also put other pieces around him. But you're talking about the best player of his generation. This is a generational talent. You have to lock this guy up, okay? This guy is the best. This guy is a old school five-tool player. He does it all. He can do everything that you need him to do on a baseball field or in a batter's box. You lock him up. He was due to be a free agent following the 2020 season, which people expected there to be a frenzy on the open market. Harper was lobbying for Trout to join him in Philly, which is close to Trout's hometown of Millville, New Jersey. But congratulations to Mike Trout. By the way, in 1,065 games, this is what he's only done. He's batted 307, 240 home runs, 648 ribbies. He scored 793 runs, and he's stolen 189 stolen bases. No player in history, ladies and gentlemen, has put up more wins above replacement through age 26, through his age 26 season, than Trout 64-30. Respect to Mike Trout for getting that money. Respect to Alex Bregman for getting his money. Baseball, they just got stupid money to hand out. Is it too late, Cody, for you and I to learn how to hit a curveball?
I think that ship has sailed.
That ship is up. We can learn how to be the Gatorade boy. Well, we come back.
Can I be Jonah Hill's character for Moneyball? I'll be that guy.
You can be that guy. I guess that makes me Brad Pitt, so I'll take that. When we come back, more baseball discussion. Raging Cajuns took on Northwestern State, who just defeated LSU the previous week. What did the Cajuns do? They got the W, getting things rolling in the right direction, Tony Robichaud's gang is. We'll talk more about that right here on the Rap Game with RP3, broadcasting live from Lake Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parse III, broadcasting live here from Lake Triomphe Golf and Country Club in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. We'll be here all week. Cody Schutz is back in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We open up the show talking about Alex Bregman getting his money, $100 million deal, contract extension, essentially. Astros have locked up their young core now for at least the next 3 to 4 years. Mike Trout got his money, more than $400 million. He will retire as a member of the Angels, the best player in baseball, the reincarnation of Mickey Mantle, if you will. We're going to keep the baseball talk going, but we're going to go down to the collegiate level. Raging Cajuns started off the season sluggish. They looked competitive against the Texas Longhorns in that series that opened up at the Teague, but they dropped 2 of 3. And they've been inconsistent. They had some bullpen issues. Lineup wasn't really being able to kind of get things together, with the exception of maybe Brennan Breaux out there lighting it up. Yeah, they've had some struggles with hitting the ball as well. They were well under 500 to start the season. Well, last night they take down the Northwestern State Demons out of the Southland Conference, 8-3 at the Teague. They're now 10-11 overall. The Raging Cajuns, Tony Robichaud's bunch, has now won 4 of its last 5. They'll return to action tonight down at Tulane. First pitch is going to be 6:30 p.m. But who were the stars last night in last night's game? Well, how about Hayden Cantrell? He went 4 for 4 with 4 runs scored, hit the cycle. His hitting streak is now 10. He's now safely hit in 10 straight games for the Raging Cajuns. He had started off the season batting around 100, the former Turlings Catholic star infielder and state champion. Now he's hitting over 300 on the year, so he's been tearing it up for the Raging Cajuns. A heck of a game for them, though, and look, baseball season is extremely long, and you can make those adjustments that need to be. And it looks like Tony Robichaud is being able to do that with his group of guys. You know, Cantrell hits for the cycle last night in the 8-3 victory. He's the first Raging Cajun to do so since 2016. He said afterwards it was a euphoric feeling. It's not every day that you hit for the cycle. It's an occasion that I can enjoy with my teammates because they helped put me in this situation. I'm going to enjoy the moment for a little while until it's time to get ready for tomorrow. They out-hit the Demons 12-9, which included three triples. The first time the team had a trio of three triples in a game since last year. Right-hander Connor Cook, he's 2-0 on the season. He picked up the win with a terrific performance. He pitched 4.0 innings of one run, three hit ball, and striking out three. And Jack Burt came in and picked up his first career save after pitching three innings and only allowing one hit. So the Raging Cajuns got back on track. Like I said, this team has won four of its last five games. It's 10-11 overall right now. And they have a terrific chance to get things going. Tulane's a pretty good ball club. That's not going to be an easy game by any stretch of the imagination for them. But then after that, it's Sunbelt play at the Teague this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with the three-game stand against Appalachian State. Friday, they'll be 6:30. Saturday, 2 p.m., and then Sunday they'll wrap it up with a 10:30 a.m. game. That's that early in the morning due to Appalachian State needing to travel back home to Boone, North Carolina. So that's why, if you're asking why the hell are they playing at 10:30 a.m., so they can build something good here. And look, I understand taking two of three out of Little Rock is not that impressive. Beating Southern Miss in extra innings and out, you know, taking care of Northwestern State. But Northwestern State's a good team. They've already beat ULM. They beat LSU already. Okay, so I know it's a midweek, and we try to devalue midweek games, but midweek games can help build confidence and kind of get you to get momentum going. They may not help you in the overall picture, but they can help you short term. And the Cajuns need all the help they can get right now. And if they can get things keep going, so to speak, here, they could build up some momentum. Maybe take this weekend series against App State, get above 500 for the year. Then they welcome Tulane to the Teague next Tuesday. That should be a winnable game. And then they'll be on the road at Troy. So they're trending in the right direction. You like seeing Brennan Breaux. He's been tearing it up. But now having Hayden Cantrell, another local product, he's stepping up. Hanson Monica seems to be playing at a higher level. He's getting his bat going. They got some pieces here. If they can just get that momentum going here at the end of March and bring that into April, this could end up being a pretty good season for the Raging Cajun baseball team. So we'll have to keep an eye out on that. When we come up after this break, our good friend Ron Higgins waking up super early for us. He's about to be traveling to Jacksonville to cover LSU men's basketball NCAA tournament game. He's going to break down what happened in Nashville with the SEC tournament, Javonte Smart talk, as well as preview this game against Yale and the seeding that the Tigers got. Right here on The Wrap, Game with RP3, live from Lake Triomphe Golf and Country Club in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to The Wrap, Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parks III, broadcasting live from Lake Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. It's time to talk some LSU hoops, though, here on 103.7 The Game, and some baseball as well, as we welcome on our next guest. He covers both the LSU football team, basketball team, and baseball team for Tiger Details. He'll be headed out to Jacksonville later today to gear up for the Tigers' tilt with the Yale Bulldogs in the opening round of the NCAA tournament. It's our pleasure to welcome back our good friend Ron Higgins. Ron, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm good. How are you, man?
Doing well, man, doing well. I appreciate you making some time out for us. I know you're busy with traveling, gearing up for the NCAA tournament. But let's take it back until last weekend, Ron. You and I were there inside the Bridgestone Arena and saw LSU get bounced early, disappointing fashion against Florida. I know that the Gators needed it more. They were a bubble team, and that locked up a spot in the NCAA tournament, that victory over LSU, the top seed in the tournament. But it's the fourth straight loss in the SEC tournament for the Tigers. And that second half, they allowed Florida to score 51 points. Just give me your thoughts now that some days have passed on the performance of LSU at the SEC tournament in Nashville.
Well, I mean, I think the second half to me was more of a byproduct of LSU defensively being in foul, getting so many fouls caught on them that they basically backed off and weren't aggressive like they should have been. And I think, honestly, I mean, talking to Cavell Bigby Williams earlier this week, I mean, he admitted that the second half, defensively, they didn't play well. And maybe a reason was the fact that the whole team was getting foul trouble, and they kind of backed off and stuff. And maybe weren't as aggressive as they had been in the past. And honestly, I mean, I thought the second half they were just trying to get to the end of the game after a while because it seemed like everything was being called on them, and everybody was in foul trouble just about. And I think everybody was just trying to survive to get to the final minutes of the game so they could still be playing. And credit for coming back. They hit shots. They hit the last shot. Guy hit a great shot. And honestly, it didn't surprise me that LSU lost. Even before going into the game, because two, Florida, needed it more. And secondly, honestly, LSU and Florida, I mean, LSU didn't match up well with them this year. Every game was like that down to the end. And I thought there was a good chance of LSU, getting knocked out. And, of course, I know everybody would be blaming it on the fact that all the Will Wade stuff. This team doesn't use that as an excuse. And they just go out and play. And I think in this case, some things happened in the second half that they couldn't turn around. And so they, got an early exit and went home, got a couple of days off before they went back to practice on Monday, and they're, looking forward to what I think is it's not an easy first-round matchup that they have. It's not easy at all. Yale is not an easy first-round matchup.
Ron, I want to get to that matchup here shortly, but before we do, I did find something impressive from the post-game presser. Is that, they didn't make excuses. Coach Benford said, hey, interim coaches don't get calls, and that's in a direct reference to the tech that was called on him for him disputing the foul call on Naz Reid when he pushed through the screen, and they called that, and they still counted the three-point shot as well. He had accountability for that, and so did the guys. And in particular, I was impressed with Javonte Smart being in the presser. I was surprised that he was there. That he answered his questions, and that, the first question is asked to him, Ron, is, about the Will Wade situation. He handled it like a champ, a very impressive young man. What were your takeaways with how LSU handled the postgame presser, in particularly Javonte?
Well, first of all, I think you have to give Javonte credit and also give Kent Lowe, LSU Sports Information, credit for realizing that, we need him in the press room. Let's let him answer this thing, and that way we can put it away and move on, which is what happened. Pat Forty answered from Yahoo Sports, asked his first question. He answered, said he never, took any money or whatever, and basically it moved on after that, which was handled actually the right way. And Javonte played well. I mean, you could tell he had fresh legs and been making some great plays the first half. Now they get to play somewhere else, get to play Yale in Jacksonville, won the Ivy League, tournament over Harvard. Team, it's not your typical Ivy League team. Most Ivy League teams will like to execute their offense and run it over and over again and take the shot clock down and make you play defense and inside of 10 seconds of the shot clock. And sooner or later, they beat you on a backdoor cut or something like that. This Yale team likes to run. It's got a bunch of decent athletes, and they like to run. I think LSU likes the fact that Yale wants to run. So we'll see what happens.
Ron, we're talking with Ron Higgins of Tiger Details. Ron, let's further dive into that matchup. You're right. This is a team that they have some better athletes than the majority of Ivy League teams that we normally see in the tournament, and they do like to run. What do they do defensively? Is there any comparisons to any teams that have given LSU trouble as some challenges that Yale presents the Tigers?
No, not really. They're not very good defensively, honestly. They give up about the same amount of points LSU does. They've been compared to LSU defensively as far as, LSU will give up a lot of points but LSU always create a lot of turnovers. I think that's the difference between Yale and LSU defensively. If LSU will create a lot of turnovers, get a lot of points off their defense. And so I think Yale just tries to remain solid defensively, where LSU tries to create turnovers. I think for LSU's sake, they'll just have to create more turnovers than they commit, for LSU, anything less than 10 turnovers is a miracle. And it's not because they don't take care of the basketball. It's because they push to play so much. And a lot of times they do take risks that aren't there. They've got a little bit smarter as the year's gone on. But LSU's whole thing is how many number of possessions they can get during a game. And so, LSU plays better when it's chaotic. And I think that's what they would like, to push the pace of this game to a chaos point.
Ron, tell me a little, we saw Naz Reid have a terrific game against Florida, double-double. He was scoring at will, and he was shooting those flat-footed three-pointers like it was nobody's business. He had a terrific game. Javonte Smart had a great game. Tremont Waters did not have a very good game against Florida. Does LSU need Waters to have a good game if this team is going to reach, or a great performance, rather, in the first two rounds if this team is going to reach the Sweet 16?
I think Tremont needs to be right around his average, 17 points, 16, 17 points. A good Tremont game is usually like 17 points, 7 or 8 assists, 2 or 3 steals, maybe 4. That's usually a Tremont game. That's kind of like the thing he has to have. Yeah. He got up, I thought early got off to a quick start against Florida and, they kind of, really cut off the penetrations. But I think Tremont needs to have not a great Tremont game, but it's a good Tremont game. Like I said, those numbers around there. If he hits those numbers, more than likely they'll win because I know that he'll get to the free throw line, hit some key free throws. I know he'll hit a couple of threes that'll be key. He'll get inside the lane for some drives. And honestly, to me, if he just gets in the lane and he gets some drives, if he can just get the ball up in the backboard, regardless whether it goes in or not, LSU's offensive rebounding is so good. It's almost like an assist the way Bibby Williams rebounds and Nas, Mullen Taylor, where he crashes the boards, Evan Williams. I think he has to, I think Tremont has to play better than he played last week, yeah, for sure.
Ron, let's talk a little bit about the selection process. We know the loss dropped them down from a 2 to a 3 seed. If they would have won against Florida, they'd likely would have locked up a 2 seed, regardless of what would have happened the semis. But they're 3, and the committee did not do them any favors, did they? They put them in a region with the number 1 overall seed in Duke, and then what many people consider the best number 2 seed in the entire tournament in Michigan State. If this team is going to make a run to the Final Four, they're going to definitely earn it. What do you think about where they were placed in that East region?
Well, it's it's a tough bracket for sure. Honestly, I always thought, even before all this stuff happened with Will, I really never thought LSU would get past the Sweet 16 anyway. I never thought they would get – I thought they would probably get the Sweet 16 and lose in the semifinal of the Sweet 16. Now I think it's a goal just to get to the Sweet 16 because of the stuff that's happened and just trying to get their karma back going the right direction. They were in a tough racket, and And, I think probably the end of the road will be the Sweet 16 if they get there. And for this team right now, getting to the Sweet 16, considering what's happened the last couple of weeks, would be an accomplishment. And then after that, I haven't written this yet, but I will. You've got to look at what's going to go on with the future of this team when this season's over. Because there's a lot of decisions to be made with this team as far as guys staying and why would and wondering if they want to stay for another year. The guys who are supposedly NBA prospects, even though there's not one person on this team whose name you see mentioned in any NBA mock draft, not one. There's not one guy on this team. Okay, so honestly, it would be a mistake for anybody on this team to go to the NBA. But with the stuff hanging out there with Will Wade and not knowing the future of that, that plays into this. And that's what's going to make this so screwy when it's all over. You know, when it's all over, that's what's going to make this. It's going to be, just kind of one big old mess once the season ends, because you don't know what's going to happen to Will. All these players who are thinking, should I stay, should I go? They don't know what's going to happen with Will. So you might have a lot of them declare. And honestly, I don't think Naz is ready. I don't think Tremont's ready. The thing with Tremont is I don't know if he would be even ready a year from now because of his height. And I think that's the factor that plays against him. Skyler could play in the NBA, but I don't know if he's ready for this year or not. That's the whole thing. But would all these guys come back if all the stuff was cleared up? I don't know. But that's the soap opera that's going to eventually play out when the season's over.
Yeah, Ron, and to further your point that you just made, I mean, if they guys do decide to leave early, whether it's not, and let's say Naz Reid and Tremont decide to go, what's Javonte going to do? Is he going to stay? We know he loves LSU. He's a local product, just like Skylar Mays is. But you could very well have a scenario where next season, and with Cavale Bigby-Williams being a senior, you could have Skylar Mays and a bunch of other new players that we don't even know of.
Exactly. That's honest to God truth. It'll be another huge roster turnover. This year, basically, only a couple people back, two or three people back. It was a whole new roster turnover. It could turn over all over again, but this year, it would turn over for really the wrong reason, which would be they just basically don't know what's going to go on with Will. So, you can always declare and even go to the combine or NBA combine in Chicago, and you could even play there and then undeclare, which is what Tremont did last year and some players have done in the past. Because of the real testimony, he's not until, was it April 22nd or May 22nd? I don't remember the date was. That kind of clouds this thing even further. But, right now, this team's focusing on Yale. I know this team will play hard. I know this team will play, give it everything it has. This team has been fun to cover. They've played through a lot of stuff. They play together. And it's been a pretty resilient group. I just hate that it ended for them this way this year. They won an SEC regular season championship under a cloud of all the stuff that went on with Will then. And they deserved better than how this is ending. And hopefully they can kind of go as far as they can in this tournament.
Ron, brother, I appreciate you making some time for us as always, my friend. Enjoy Jacksonville, and we'll talk to you next week. Hopefully there'll be more games for us to dissect and preview next week, brother.
I hope so. We'll see what happens.
Thank you, man. It's Ron Higgins. Tiger Details breaking down the LSU men's basketball team for us right here on the Wrap Game with RP3. We're broadcasting live from Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parks III, broadcasting live from Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. Cody Schutz is man in the ones and twos back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Did you know that the Major League Baseball season has officially begun? Yeah, it's going on right now in a game that's taking place in Japan. That's right, that's right. The Mariners are playing a game in the Tokyo Dome.
About to say, don't undersell this. It's not just in Japan. It's in the Tokyo Dome. It automatically gets six stars.
Automatically gets six stars. So we're going to throw up our first Twitter poll question of the day is inspired by this. And you're going to have a few choices. Did you know, do you feel that the Major League Baseball season should start overseas? Do you not care? Or your third and final answer, did you even know that this game was being played? Go to the 1037 The Game Twitter account here shortly. I'll retweet it as well and vote in our latest poll. Did you know that the Major League Baseball season had officially started and that it, and do you care that it did, in fact, start? We'll keep the baseball talk going here, but more local. LSU returns to Alex Box Stadium tonight. They're going to be welcoming in the 11-10 Nicholls State Colonels, the Fighting Colonels. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7. The game pregame is going to start at 6, first pitch 6:30. Another one of these good midweek games versus in-state opponents that LSU and Paul Mainieri like to do. What do we know about this matchup? Well, you know, LSU is raised in the rankings. They're now back in the top 10 in all five of the polls. LSU leads the all-time series versus Nicholls. It's not even close, 54-23. And that includes that 10-1 victory last season there in Baton Rouge. And they've actually won 27 of the last 29 meetings. So this has been a one-sided affair of recently. LSU's going to send the freshman. That's right. He began the season as the Saturday starter, Landon Marceau. 1-1 on the year. That ERA, 6.48. In about 16 innings of work, 14 strikeouts, 9 walks. So Landon Marceau is going to have an opportunity here in the midweek to kind of get his mojo going, so to speak. They were really high on this guy. Like I said, he started the season as the Saturday starter. They have a lot of faith in him that he reminds them the way he's built. He's built very similar to Walker, Eric Walker, the ace of the staff, who's recovering back from having off-season surgery and missing all of last year. So, Landon Marceau, expectations are high for the young man. Paul Mainieri and his staff believe that he can rise to the occasion. So, even though he's had a rough start to the year and got roughed up, when you have an ERA of 6.48, okay, you got roughed up. No way around it. So, it's either going to be Landon Marceau tonight, the matchup, or it's going to be sophomore Mikhail Hilliard, who's got a, he's 0-0 on the year, but a 2.16 ERA. So either one, Marceau's trying to get his confidence back. Hilliard's coming back from offseason surgery as well after that sensational freshman season. So could be a good day at the ballpark for either one of those young men as they take the bump. The senior for Nicholls, the righty Parker White, he will be taking the mound for the Colonels. So LSU baseball gets back to work tonight versus the Colonels. Once again, pregame right here on 103.7 The Game at 6 o'clock, 6:30, first pitch. When we come back here, second hour of the Wrap Game with RP3, we're going to welcome on UNO head men's basketball coach Mark Schlesinger here on the Wrap Game with RP3, live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for like locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3. Raymond Parts the Third.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. We'll be broadcasting live here all week long. But it's time to get back to the hardwood and talk postseason college basketball. Our next guest is a mere 44 years old, but he's already accomplished a great deal. After spending 11 seasons under Mike McConathy at Northwestern State University, he became the head coach of the UNO Privateers in 2011. He's won 112 games in his tenure as he's helped guide the program, rebounding fully from the effects of Hurricane Katrina when the program itself was nearly shut down. In just a few years, he ended up guiding the Privateers to the regular season and tournament title for the Southland Conference in 2017 that ended a 21-year drought in the NCAA tournament. He was named the Southland Coach of the Year in 2017 as well. This season, he has guided the team to a 19-13 overall record, including a 12-6 mark in the Southland Conference. His team upset top seed Sam Houston State in the Southland Tournament semifinals in Katy, Texas, before falling short against Abilene Christian in the conference championship game. Today, later today, down at the UNO Lakefront Arena, his team will be opening up the CollegeInsider.com tournament, the CIT, when they host Texas Southern 7 o'clock tip. It's our privilege to welcome on our guest, Mark Schlesinger, head coach of the UNO Privateers. Coach, how are you this morning?
Doing great. Living the dream. I appreciate you guys having me on today.
Not a problem, Coach. Appreciate you making some time for us. I know it's an exciting time down there for your Privateers and everyone that follows them. Let's go back to the conference tournament over there in Katy, Texas. Your team goes in there, you build up some momentum, you upset Sam Houston State in the semis, you knock them out of the tournament, and then you go toe-to-toe with Abilene Christian, falling short in the conference championship game. Tell me, how do you feel about your team's performance in the conference tournament this year?
It was a great week. I mean, we had really continued to develop and grow throughout the season. I think one of the things that you always hope as a coach is that your team will respond from a loss or a setback or a poor performance, and they had answered the bell every single time all year, and really were hungry to get better and hungry to make improvements. And you know, that was evident when we got to that tournament, because we got there and we're pitted really against the three hottest teams in our league. We went up against Lamar in the first round, who had won 9 in a row. Was the hottest team in the league. We go against the league champion in Sam Houston, and we go against the second place team, Abilene Christian, who had won maybe, I think it was like 9 out of 10 as well. So they were all three playing their best basketball. But our guys, you know, had fought through adversity with injuries and different things throughout the year, and had finished in third place. But then for us to get to the tournament and really make a strong run and play our best basketball of the year, was exciting to see them play. And we just came up a little short on Saturday night and ran out of gas a little bit, to be honest with you. But excited for where this put us, and really excited for where our future is. And then being able to play in this tournament tonight, man, what an opportunity.
We're on with the head coach of the UNO Privateers men's basketball team, Mark Schlesinger. Mark, tell me a little bit about, you know, walk me back through when you first took over this job, you know, back in 2011. This was a program that was still reeling from the effects of Hurricane Katrina and had been kind of displaced, had been moved down to Division III, then back up. You guys didn't join the Southland Conference in 2014. Did you ever believe in those early days that your team would be competing in conference tournaments and in the mix to play postseason basketball year in and year out?
Yeah, I did. I may have been the only crazy one who did. there wasn't a whole mess of people ready to jump on that wagon with us. But you know, when you do this for a living, and you better have faith in your maker first, and then you better have faith in yourself and your kids and their ability to overachieve. And I think that's what, from day one, we chose to put all of our energy and resources into our team. And, you know, we passed on some stuff that other coaches, when they first took over programs, might have thought was important, whether it's, you know, a guy comes in for a new job and they want to rip off all the signage that was there because they want new signage, or they, you know, they want to repaint this or repaint that, or they, you know, they go out and spend tons of time recruiting instead of tons of time with their team. And I think we had a very strategic plan that we were going to, what we didn't have in fiscal resources, you know, because we were one of the lowest funded programs in the country and still are near the bottom, of one of the lowest funded programs in the country. We were going to put all of our strength of time and our human resources in how much time could we put into our student athletes, how much time could we put in investing in them and building relationships and getting them better. Sometimes the best recruit you got is the one in your house already. And getting that guy better and get him to be better than he thought he could be is a way better recruit than the one that may be out there that some guy seen him one time says is a 3- or 4-star guy. Great story is our freshman of the year this year, Jarrell Gates from Charlotte, North Carolina, had one scholarship offer, and that was us. 2 years ago, we had the conference player of the year in the league, Eric Thomas. He had one Division I scholarship offer, and it was us. And sometimes it's finding the right guy that fits your system that you can project and think you can get a lot better to put them where they're at. But to think that we could be here even this quickly, even though people think 8 years, that's a long time. And from what we took over here, when I got here, and there was literally two basketballs and not a full set of uniforms when I got here, it was a pretty tough start. But I'm very proud of the progress we've made. And very excited about where we're going.
We're on with UNO Privateers men's basketball head coach Mark Schlesinger here on the Wrap Game with RP3. You know, Coach, you talked about those kind of guys that you recruited and you got to buy into the program. Another guy that two guys that spring to mind, and that is Christavius Gill from Ash. You were one of the few offers that he had coming out of high school as well. And then Mike Zeno. Coming out of there at Beaumont, Texas. He had very few offers, too. And both of those guys were huge key pieces in your run to the NCAA tournament a couple years ago. Now that you're established, though, and you have the NCAA tournament appearance underneath your belt, has recruiting gotten easier now that you're more established and in more name recognition and more success? Or is it still a challenge recruiting there for a Southland Conference team?
I don't know that recruiting ever gets easy, because you're always going to want to recruit generally a guy that somebody else wants to, and getting a student athlete and their family to make the biggest decision of their life and get them to say yes is never easy. I don't think maybe it is for other guys, but. For me, I just think if you're really investing and working hard in these guys and trying to build a relationship, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of energy, and it's not easy. But the biggest battle is really finding the guys that fit your culture, your program, that you know can be successful. And for us, being such an integral part of our community and our city, we need to have guys that want to be in New Orleans, that want to be a part of our great culture, that want to be a part of a very, very diverse campus and student body with people from all over the world that are interested in that and find the people that are okay with that. And so that's a different part about it too. But I think that the longer that we do it, the more success we have. Obviously, it validates us and gets us indoors much quicker than we could have gotten in before.
Coach, tell me a little bit about this year's squad. Obviously, you got 19 wins on the season. 12 of those came in conference play. Tell me a little bit about the makeup of this team. What's this team's identity? And who are some of the guys that are provided leadership for you there on the court and off of it?
Well, we had an incredible group of guys. Scott Plaisance Jr. Was the senior for us this year from Country Day in Metairie. and had played a couple of years there with Coach Marlin at Lafayette and transferred back home. He was all conference, all tournament. Really had a great year for us, and fought through a broken rib in the middle of the season that kind of slowed him down, but kept playing, and just was a tough guy for us throughout the year. We lost Ezekiel Charles, our leading rebounder and scorer, with about nine to play, and so then we had some guys step up from there. But you know, Gates was our freshman of the year in the league. We've got an incredible trio of sophomores, and Troy Green from LaPlace here close to New Orleans, Damian Rosser from Atlanta, Lamont Burzat from here from Landry Walker, and so we've got a really hardcore group of young guys that are going to carry us forward for the next couple of years. We've only got one junior on scholarship, and that's Bryson Robinson, who is probably our best 3-point scorer. And after that, it is all underclassmen. So I think our future is very, very bright. We had a good recruiting class in the fall, and I think we're going to have a very bright future for the next few years.
Coach, let's talk about tonight's matchup there at UNO Lakefront Arena when you guys welcome into town Texas Southern. This is a team that's had some good recent success making the NCAA tournament. They out of the SWAC. They are, of course, coached by former LSU coach Johnny Jones. Tell me a little bit about what the Tigers bring to the table and what kind of challenges you expect Johnny Jones's bunch to present your team tonight.
Well, I mean, they're loaded. I mean, they're loaded with talent. They have, you know, 8 or 9 guys on their team that are either transfer redshirt seniors or grad transfers. You know, when you go through and they got Jeremy Combs, you know, who played at LSU. He was the SWAC player of the year at 6'7". Jalen Patterson, a really, really talented guard from LSU, who is a grad transfer, 7'2". Senior transfer, Trayvon Reed from Auburn, transfer from Samford, Colorado State, Nevada, UMass. You just keep going down the line, and they have loaded their team with talent, and they're very, very good. They're very big. They're very long. And obviously Johnny is a fine basketball coach, and is very, very good. So it'll be a great game. We're excited for the challenge. This is our third straight year to be in postseason, which means so much to our program and our student-athletes. And so for us, it's a great opportunity, and we're anxious for the challenge.
Coach, we'll let you out. Get you out of here on an easy one, brother, on an easy one. You know, all those years you spent under Coach Mike McConathy, he's known as one of the best guys in the business. Terrific tenure there up in Natchitoches at Northwestern State, and a terrific coach. But what are some of the lessons that you learned under Coach McConathy all those years, brother?
Man, we don't have enough time. Trust me. I was so lucky to sit next to him, to watch, to learn, and you know, my success is a blueprint of him and what he did, and how he went about building the program, how he went about building relationships. I don't know that there's a better relationship builder in college basketball, where he gets people to buy into what his philosophy is, what his vision is. Then just his patience is phenomenal, and I was just lucky. He empowered me at an early stage there, and let me coach, let me get involved, let me do things, and really prepared me for this opportunity. And you look at his coaching tree, where, you know, Buzz Williams, I replaced Buzz Williams, and Buzz has done phenomenally well. Dave Simmons was, you know, was a head coach at McNeese, and as good a ball coach as there is. Paul Weir was a graduate assistant for us, and he's a head coach at New Mexico. So he's got an incredible coaching tree when you think about it. He had put out 4 Division I head coaches at one point a year ago. That's pretty strong for a guy in Natchitoches, Louisiana. So he's one of the best, and there's a reason he's the state's all-time winningest college coach, because he's one of the best.
Well, Coach Mark, I appreciate you making some time for us, as always. And, look, best of luck to your team tonight and moving forward, and congratulations on another terrific season and everything that you've done down there with the Privateers. We wish you nothing but the best of luck, brother.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
That's UNO Privateers men's basketball coach Mark Schlesinger. His team is gearing up to host Texas Southern tonight there in the CIT. 7 o'clock tip there at UNO Lakefront Arena. When we come back here on The Wrap Game with RP3 live from Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, we'll talk more hoops right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to The Wrap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parks III, broadcasting live from Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. A lot of activity outside the trailer here. Today is the Pro-Am, and things are getting busy around here as the sun begins to rise over the course, the beautiful course here, home for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. This week, though, in addition to being March Madness and the Louisiana Open, it's also the time of year where teams, college football teams in particular, hold their pro days. This Friday coming up, LSU will hold their pro day. So the likes of Greedy Williams and Devin White, the two All-Americans, they'll take part in that. Nick Brissett will be there trying to improve on his 40 time and his bench press from the NFL Combine. Foster Moreau will also be there. This is the last opportunity, really, besides maybe some one-on-one interviews or workouts prior to the NFL draft, that these prospects have a chance to impress the scouts once again. You go through the whole process, whether it's the East-West Shrine Game or the Reese's Senior Bowl in Mobile, and then it's the NFL Combine, and then it's the Pro Day. That's kind of the last hurrah, so to speak, for these guys to show the scouts for all the NFL teams what they can do. So LSU has theirs on Friday, open to the media. People can go check it out. The Raging Cajuns are having their pro day today. That's going to be highlighted by Jamarcus Bradley, wide receiver. He has a chance of making it at the next level, at least getting to a training camp. So it'll be him and others that'll be working out. That'll be later this afternoon into the early evening. Head coach Billy Napier will also address the media as well. Also today, over in Lake Chuck, the McNeese State Cowboys are holding their pro day. But it's a bit of a mess. They're holding their pro day today. It's not open to members of the media, which is one thing that kind of has the old red flag waving. The other thing that makes this interesting and why it seems to be a little messy. Now, mind you, they had a coaching change. Lance Guidry was let go. His contract was not renewed after 3 years. He's now over as the defensive coordinator at Southeastern Louisiana, another team that plays in the Southland Conference with McNeese State. He was also a player there at McNeese, so this is a legacy guy that's been let go. Now he's elsewhere. Not only does the new coaching staff decide to close Pro Day off to the media, which that's the first time I've ever heard that myself, because that's a chance to help promote your program. In essence, Pro Day helps the guys get in front of scouts. That's the number one priority. The second priority, it also helps your program with recruits because of the media coverage about the pro day gets out there, and you let folks know that you help send guys to the NFL, which helps you on the recruiting trail. This is bare bones, basic kind of stuff. Well, guess who's not taking part in McNeese State's pro day today? Their best player. Their guy who has a legit chance of being drafted. Southland Conference Defensive Player of the Year and All-American B.J. Blunt will not, in fact, participate at McNeese Pro Day on today. Instead, get this, Blunt will run at Tulane's Pro Day on Thursday. Blunt confirmed that to our good friend David Berry of the Lake Charles American Press yesterday. So your star player, the guy who was Defensive Player of the Year, the guy who's an All-American, a guy who has a legit chance of being drafted and helping give publicity to your football program, is not taking part in your pro day. That's interesting. Why is that? Why is he not taking part in the pro day? Does this have something to do with the coaching change? Is this a decision that BJ made himself? Your best star player is not taking part in your own pro day. A pro day that you've now decided does not need to be open to the media. So the pro day itself is not getting publicity. And the only publicity that's occurring with this is negative because you're not having media there. Do you not want them to ask questions why BJ Blunt is not at your pro day and instead is opting to have his pro day with Tulane? An entire different college, in a different conference, at a different level. Not a good look for the McNeese State Cowboys today. David Berry tweeted this information out also saying that he asked Blunt why he's not participating at the McNeese Pro Day. And David Berry's reporting he did not respond to that particular question. Just didn't answer that question from David Berry on why BJ Blunt's not taking part. One of the most decorated players in modern McNeese history is not taking part in that program's Pro Day. We'll keep an eye on that. I'm sure there'll be some reports coming out about that. When we come back here on the Wrap Game with RP3, live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, we're going to talk to the voice of the LSU Tigers, the one and only Chris Blair, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parsons III, broadcasting live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. Pro-Am is gearing up around here right now. Lots of activity here at the course. Tournament actually starts tomorrow. Strong field of this tournament. We'll dive deeper in that later in the show. Right now we're efforting, which is my new favorite word, efforting the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, to be joining us live here on 103.7 The Game. But as we wait to try to get Mr. Blair on, you know what? We got more to talk about. There's plenty to talk about. Let's talk about this LSU men's basketball team. And if you want to talk to me about the LSU men's basketball team, who's gearing up, they'll be playing tomorrow pregame, 11 o'clock tip around 11:32 there in Jacksonville. You can listen to the pregame and the live game right here on 103.7 The Game. You can also, if you feel adventurous, join me at Twin Peaks on Johnston for a little bit of an LSU watch party. I'll be live out there. Got the setup. I'll have some swag, some hats, some shirts. Come hang out. They have some terrific deals going on for the NCAA tournament, so come join me tomorrow for lunchtime watching LSU. Then you can also join the good brother Ben Love out there on Friday night at Twin Peaks on Johnson from 6 to 8 to watch some NCAA tourney action. But if you want to give us a call and give us your thoughts about the LSU men's basketball team and their matchup versus the Yale Bulldogs, feel free to give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We talked to Ron Higgins earlier today on the show, and he told us that, you know, Yale is not really known to being a very good defensive-minded team. There are a lot of ways a mirror image of LSU. LSU has struggled with the transition defense all season. That's something that now suspended head coach Will Wade has talked about trying to improve the transition defense. Yale doesn't do many things defensively that may scare you, so to speak. But this is a team that did defeat Baylor a few seasons ago in the NCAA tournament. And they're not going to be intimidated by LSU. They're probably going to have the mindset, to be quite honest with you, that LSU is vulnerable because of everything that's been swirling around the program, with Will Wade being indefinitely suspended, with Javonte Smart being held out of the regular season finale against Vanderbilt, and then he's being cleared only 2 hours before the start of LSU's time at the SEC tournament. You know, they've also probably seen how Florida's defeated LSU twice, how Arkansas got the best of LSU. So if you're Yale, you're probably not that intimidated by LSU. Plus, look, this is the NCAA tournament. So you're going to get the best effort from every opponent. There's never, I don't buy into this notion that there's ever an easy game in the NCAA tournament. I think Virginia proved that last year, that when you overlook, look past an opponent and maybe look to in a potential matchup in the second round or in the Sweet 16, that you do yourself a disservice and that you put yourself in jeopardy of losing. And that's exactly what occurred last year, if we all remember. LSU can't be looking ahead towards a possible Sweet 16 matchup with against Michigan State and Tom Izzo, because they may not be able to get there. They have to take care of business. As good and as talented, and look, this team is immensely talented, the LSU Tigers are. What's Naz Reid, your freshman power forward, the big fella who's really kind of come into his own. He's blossomed as the season has progressed. He's learned how to play in that big frame of his. You got Cavale Bigby Williams, senior leader, likes to do the dirty work down low. He has postseason experience as a member of Oregon's Final Four team from a few years ago. Skylar Mace, he provides you leadership. He's kind of the heart of this team in a lot of ways. Javonte Smart is sensational. He gets a little too amped up at times, but he can get you buckets in droves. And then we know what Marlon Taylor does. He jumps out of the gym. This team is immensely talented. They have far more talent than the Yale Bulldogs do. Absolutely, without question. And they probably have more talent than whoever their second-round matchup would be, whether that's going to be Maryland or Belmont. Without question. Once again, LSU wins the talent thing. But with everything swirling around them, that's going to be a distraction. And here's the other thing. LSU has not played consistent basketball this year in good stretches. This is the same team that beats Kentucky on a buzzer beater and takes down Tennessee in overtime without Tremont Waters, who was sick. And yet they lost two to Florida. They inexplicably lost to Arkansas. They inexplicably struggled against Missouri. So the Tigers are not, they're immensely talented, but they're still in a lot of ways a young team, and they cannot take any opponent for granted. Because if they do, they're going to get bounced. Now, I think LSU is going to take care of business. I think they're going to push aside the Will Wade stuff. I really do. You saw that in the way Naz Reid and Javonte Smart talked after the loss to Florida at the SEC tournament there in Nashville inside the Bridgestone Arena. The way they talked about how Benford's going to be their coach and that they're just moving forward and that they're playing for each other. And I've said this a lot on this program, that they play for another way. They play for Wade Sims. That's who they really play for. And I don't think they're going to go out. I think they're going to have a bad taste in their mouth about losing to Florida in the SEC tournament and being bounced and having to be put in a three seed. I think you're going to see them play with a bit of a chip on their shoulder. I think they're going to take care of the Yale Bulldogs. I really do. That said, Yale is going to give them, it's not going to be a pushover game by any stretch of the imagination. And let's be honest, LSU has not routed opponents this year. That's just not that team. They like to play close games. There's something about being in a close game that kind of just speaks to this LSU team. They like the pressure being on them, and most of the time they rise to the occasion and win those games. A few of those times they have not. They're going to have to come out strong. They're going to have to come out fast against Yale. Once again, this is a program that beat Baylor 3 years ago now in the 2016 NCAA tournament. Beat them by 79 to 75. And then they turned around and lost at Duke. Here's some interesting kind of next-gen analytical stats, as reported on by Cody Worsham, LSU's sports digital media reporter. Yale is ninth nationally in minutes continuity, 14th nationally, and 338th nationally in forcing turnovers. So, once again, they're 338th in forcing turnovers. They are not a good defensive team. They are not going to press. They are not going to force turnovers. Okay, they're efficient on the other way. So they kind of give up on the defense a little bit. That's their weakness. They make up for it with offense. But interesting, even though they're that ranked that low in forcing turnovers, they are a good defensive rebounding team. They're actually 24th in the nation in defensive rebounding percentage. So LSU's going to have to win the battle on the boards. I'd expect a big game from Cavell Bigby-Williams tomorrow. I think he's going to have a big game. I think you're going to see a big game between him and Naz Reid. LSU has the favorable matchup with their bigs. I think they're going to attack that. I think they're going to attack the basket. I think you're going to see Skylar Mays, and you're going to see Tremont Waters and Javonte Smart. I think you're going to see them attack the basket. They're going to attack the post of the Bulldogs. That's going to be a huge difference in that game. But Yale does have some talented players. And an interesting story, an interesting connection also for this Yale team is that they also have a connection. But before we dive into that, let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and let's welcome on Craig from New Iberia. Craig, how are you this morning, brother?
What's up, my brother?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. Well, what's on your mind this morning, my man?
Oh, man, look, super pumped about these Tigers. I agree with you. They're going to play with a chip on their shoulder. One little subplot to look at, and, you know, we don't like to talk conspiracies too much around here, but if you look at the Florida game, Florida shot 26 free throws to LSU's 11. We had 18 points in the paint in the first half against Florida and only went to the foul line twice. All I'm saying is the NCAA in general does not want LSU to even sniff a chance at the Final Four. So to me, if you're going to beat a team in a close game, you got to actually outplay them by double digits. I'm just calling a spade a spade. So just watch for that little subplot. Any close game, LSU will not get the benefit of the calls. If you remember that Tremont Waters play in the second half, I don't think I've seen Tremont get a charge all season. Basically, every call went against them. And, you know, I'm just calling it like it is, man. Any close game, I'm going to be super, super worried.
Craig, I appreciate the phone call, brother, and I want to elaborate a little bit on that. I would agree that they called the way they called that game between LSU and Florida at the SEC tournament was definitely a disservice to LSU because they called a lot of fouls, and LSU stopped being aggressive defensively in the second half because I think they were worried about having guys fouled out. And the Naz Reid foul should not have been a foul to begin with. Not only should head coach Benford not been called for a T, which he shouldn't have been, but Naz was just pushing through a screen. That was kind of a cheap call. Should not been have called. I agree with you. And I think if you're LSU, Craig, you got to have the mentality of it's us against the world. I know that's a cliche, but you got to have that. You got to say, look, our coach isn't here. National media is talking about us. National media is saying that we should forfeit and not go to the postseason. Dickie V's putting us on blast. You know what? We're going to shut out all that noise. We're not going to let the refs decide this game. We're not going to let anyone else factor into what we're going to do. We're going to do what we do best, and that's play high-percentage basketball, and we're going to go out here and put this game out of reach before it can even get close. I think that's going to be the mentality. I think you're going to see a fast start for LSU against Yale tomorrow. That's just my feelings on that. And Yale does have a Bulldog guard, does have a tie to Louisiana, which is interesting, and this is our good friend Sheldon Mickles reported with The Advocate. That Trey Phillips for the senior guard, Trey Phillips, senior guard for the Ivy League champion, the Yale Bulldogs. He's going to get against LSU, obviously, but his father was a star. His late father was a star at both Southern Lab there in BR and played at Southern University, a Jaguar star in Bobby Fills. So he has a connection to Baton Rouge. His father was from BR, local product, also played there at Southern University. So that's a kind of an interesting story for tomorrow's NCAA tournament matchup. We'll talk more basketball as we close out here the second hour. I'm going to tell you about some news concerning a former LSU star, a former recruit, and a former player for Will Wade. Where is he going next? We're going to talk about it right here on the Wrap Game with RP3, broadcasting live from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club here in Broussard on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parks, with her broadcasting live here from Lake Triumph Golf and Country Club in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. We're going to close out the second hour about some more LSU basketball news, but it's about a former player. You guys remember Galen Alexander. Started off his high school career as a star at Brobridge High School. Did so well at Brobridge that he got on the map, on the recruiting map for LSU. LSU was recruiting him hard even back when he was at Brobridge High School. He transferred to LCA, Lafayette Christian Academy. And there was the issue with the state, the LHSAA, saying that he was not eligible to play that junior season. Had to go to a third-party arbiter, and they reversed the decision and said they cleared him to play. He ended up finishing his high school career with the Knights. And he actually got injured as a senior, so he got banged up his senior season, so never really got to even play a full season with the Knights. But he ended his high school career with the Knights, and he still signed with LSU coming out of high school. He was a four-star prospect, kind of a combo guy, a wing player, guard slash forward. He can do both. This past year, he was at Jones County Community College, and he averaged 17 points and 8 rebounds, the 6'7" sophomore did. Well, you're probably wondering, I remember Galen Alexander. He started at LSU, but he's not at LSU now. Well, that is correct. If you remember, Galen was part of what I call a purge by Will Wade during the season. If you remember correctly, Galen was suspended and kicked off the team, dismissed, rather, from the team by Will Wade. It was never revealed why he was dismissed from the team. Basketball coach Will Wade, this would have been essentially a year ago last month, that Will Wade did some house cleaning for disciplinarian reasons. He was in his first year. Galen, and as well as Mayan Kerr of Victory Rock Prep out of Florida, both were dismissed from the team. Both were freshmen. They only appeared in, barely got any playing time whatsoever. They were dismissed from the team. Wade did not elaborate why they had been dismissed from the team. This is also the same time that Wade had to suspend Brandon Rochelle out of Natchitoches Central for one game for violating team policies. And he also had to suspend sophomore, the late Wade Sims. So it was around that time, it was last January, that he had to suspend two of his players and dismiss two more. Rochelle ended up leaving LSU. He transferred out, has gone the JUCO route as well. Galen landed on his feet, and he played at Jones County Community College. He's still a coveted prospect. West Virginia has recruited him. Other teams have been recruiting him, giving him offers, but he announced yesterday on his Twitter account with the new kind of like Photoshop pictures that the kids do, that he is now verbally committed to Georgetown University. That's right, Galen Alexander, the Brobridge High School product and LCA Knight, has now going to be taking his services and playing his college ball, finally realizing his dream to play big-time college basketball at Georgetown University. He's going to be a Hoya. Now, whether or not he signs on the bottom line, we'll have to see, but he tweeted out that he was hashtag committed of going to the play for Georgetown University. So congratulations for Galen Alexander. A lot of times when these kids, they have these mistakes, whatever it might have been, once again, Will Wade never elaborated on why he had to dismiss the two players and why he had to suspend the other ones. Usually these coaches don't, and the programs don't. They don't go, you know, delve into the details. And usually the only time we find out why these kids are being suspended or dismissed from teams is when the kids speak about it. None of the kids have really kind of elaborated on what happened. They just went ahead and tried to get their careers back on track. So apparently it looks like Galen has done that. He had a good productive season there at Jones and has once again reminded people just how of a talented player he is. And look, this is a guy who has an opportunity now to do something special. You know, he could have stayed at Brobridge. He did not. He opted to go to LCA. There was some drama involved with that. Then he got injured, so he never kind of lived up to his potential there at LCA. And then he gets dismissed from LSU during his freshman season and has to go the JUCO route. So this will be a time for him to really shine on the big stage finally. So congratulations to Galen Alexander for getting that another opportunity to play big-time college basketball as he's now committed to the Georgetown Hoyas. Second hour's in the books. Coming up here in the third hour, we're going to talk New Orleans Pelicans and New Orleans Saints with our good buddy Les East of Crescent City Sports right here on the Wrap Game with RP3 live from Lake Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stepped on your locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
To Hardaway. Missed the three again. Peyton's got the rebound.
There's
baseline
a triple
left.
There's a triple
yes,
double.
It is.
Five in
his
a row.
His fifth straight. He brings it across half court. 15, 10, and 11 for Elfrid Peyton. Screen from Diallo. Miller can't do much with it. Throws it to Peyton. Drives the right slot. Freezes. Shoots halfway down the lane and scores. Timeout, Rick Carlisle.
Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Lake Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. Cody Schutz is handling things there in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. What you just heard there is Elfrid Peyton. We're going to start just calling him Mr. Triple-Double himself. Recorded his fifth triple-double. We talked about it earlier this week, how he joins elite company, the likes of Oscar Robertson and Michael Jeffrey Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain and Russell Westbrook for that accomplishment. He's also tied the franchise record for most triple-doubles in the season of six. That mark belonged to Chris Paul. So with 10 games left to go in the season, Elfrid Peyton can continue to rewrite some records and continue to showcase his skill set and maybe earn himself a long-term deal from the New Orleans Pelicans. We're going to dive deeper into that subject with our good friend He covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans for Crescent City Sports. It's the one and only Les East. Les, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, Raymond. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. Look, you know, I think a lot of people thought the Pels were just going to check out after the decision, after especially after Drew Holiday got banged up and he needed to sit out some games, and that the NBA and Gail Benson came to an agreement about Anthony Davis's minutes being restricted, and they were already kind of eliminated from the playoff picture. Yet we've seen anything but. This team continues to scrap, continues to fight, and a big reason of that is the play of Elfrid Payton and Julius Randle. Both guys are going to be free agents. Give me your thoughts and your impressions, first of all, on Elfrid Payton, the former Raging Cajun, who's had five consecutive triple-doubles.
Well, I think he has exceeded even the most optimistic of expectations from when he signed during last offseason. I think the Pelicans were hoping that he would have a breakout season after a somewhat disappointing start to his career. He's undoubtedly had that, even though he's only played in about 33 or 34 games because of injuries. But I think the degree to which he's had a breakout season has been even greater than the Pelicans probably could have realistically hoped for. He's been outstanding. The record has been much better when he has been on the floor than it has been when he has not been on the floor. The run he's on now, as you mentioned, is historic. He's in a very elite company with what he has accomplished, and I think privately the Pelicans are probably saying, you know, enough with the triple doubles already. Every time you do that, your value on the open market goes up, and we don't want you exceeding what we're willing to pay you in the off season. So there's no doubt he and Julius Randle have done a lot here to increase their value on the open market, which was already pretty high because they both played very well from the beginning of the year, and they're probably playing even better with Anthony Davis's minutes being curtailed.
Let's talk about the possibility. Look, Elford's from the West Bank. He's a Louisiana kid. He's a Raging Cajun star. He loves the state. This is his state. How much of a priority do you think the Pels are going to make on trying to re-sign Elfrid and give him a long-term deal? I don't think you're going to have to break the bank on this guy. Okay, you're going to have to just give him a good deal. It doesn't have to be a sensational deal. What do you think the likelihood is that the Pels and Elfrid Payton come together and he commits to being here long-term?
Well, it's hard to say because we don't know who the general manager is going to be, and we're not sure who the head coach is going to be. So, you know, the people who are going to be making that decision from the Pelicans' standpoint aren't there right now, we assume. And so it's hard to say, but he should be a big priority. I mean, they're going to be going through enough of a transition in the front office, potentially on the coaching staff, and with the trading of their best player, presumably in the offseason, and Davis, they don't need to be replacing a guy who's been a really good point guard. So it should be a very big priority for the Pelicans, whoever ultimately makes a decision, to bring Elfrid Payton back. You're right that this is probably the place where he would most like to be able to continue his NBA career. I think I mentioned before when I introduced him pregame at home, they introduced him as being from Gretna. So he has a lot of pride in where he's from, and he wants to be here. I don't believe a whole lot in a hometown discount per se, because like all of us, players want to go to the employer that's going to compensate them the best. And all other things being equal, I think he would prefer to sign with the Pelicans, but he's not going to take substantially less money to stay here. The Pelicans are going to have to make it worth his while, and they should. We just have to see who is going to be the person representing the Pelicans on that side of the negotiation.
Talking to Les East of CrescentCitySports.com. Les, let's talk about Julius Randle. He's another guy that I've been immensely impressed with. He's been very consistent with his play all season long. He's stepped up, especially when Anthony Davis has been out of the lineup. It seems to kind of you get the best of Julius Randle. And once again, this goes into a larger, for me, of another Laker that Magic Johnson and company gave up on. He's played his best basketball this season with the Pels, and we see what D'Angelo Russell is doing with the Brooklyn Nets. And those are two guys that they just kind of gave up on and shipped out of town, and both of them are playing better not being a Laker. I'm not for sure what that means, but Julius Randle, that's another guy, especially with Anthony Davis going to be shipped out. Regardless of who the GM is, do you think they make it a priority to try to re-sign Julius Randle?
Yeah, I think they do, and I think they should. You know, when you look at Randle and D'Angelo Russell, you know, the one difference between those two is D'Angelo Russell looked more like a bust when he was with the Lakers. Randle didn't look like a bust. He had his best year last year when they finally figured out how they wanted to use him, and he was finally healthy enough. He went through a lot of complicating factors with injuries and with them starting him, bringing him off the bench, playing him inside, playing him outside. They didn't know what to do with him, and yet he showed some improvement. So I think they made a mistake in letting go of a guy who is just starting to show what he could do last year. I never understood why the Pelicans were able to get him last July, but it was an astute move on their part to take advantage of the Lakers' mistake there. You know, I think another reason why both these guys should be a priority for the Pelicans is that, you know, they're going to make this Anthony Davis trade, we assume, but also this year and in coming years, they're going to have to supplement their roster with some key free agent signings, and it's going to be easier to bring in quality free agents if you have those two pieces locked up long term, and you show that not only are they going to be able to play with those two guys, but you're going to tell potential free agents, look, you know, we took care of these two guys long term because they showed us what they could do. So I think the presence of those two players going forward is going to be extremely important, not only for what they contribute on the court, but for the message it sends to other prospective Pelicans down the road.
Let's talk a little bit about the remaining of the schedule. We know Anthony Davis's minutes are going to be restricted. What can we expect to see out of this team in the final 10 games of the regular season? Are we going to continue to see the same kind of rotation guys out there with Elford and Randle and Diallo and all those guys? Is this what we're going to see, what we've seen the last 2 weeks? Is this what we're going to see in the final 10 games?
Yeah, I think so. I think Alvin Gentry has figured out what he wants to do and what he's able to do within the confinements that have been handed to him. They don't have any more back-to-back games, so the exhausted Anthony Davis will not have to sit out either end of a back-to-back to rest going forward, but his minutes aren't going to go above that 21-minute ceiling that they've established for no good reason. So I think, yeah, that their goal the rest of the way is just what it's been, to compete and to give young players extended minutes so they can continue to evaluate them and maybe accelerate their development for the future. So Randle and Payton are going to be the key guys, but I think Frank Jackson has emerged as a guy who's become a pretty key contributor on a nightly basis, and then you're going to continue to see a lot of other young guys like Diallo, who's had a decent run of double-doubles off the bench himself, and then Kenrich Williams, who's been up and down but is a solid defender and rebounder. And, you know, maybe we'll see a little more Stanley Johnson. They haven't played him a whole lot since they made the trade to get him a couple of weeks ago. So the rotation, I think, is pretty much set. And they're going to just continue what they've been doing and focus on the young guys as best they can.
Talking to Les East of CrescentCitySports.com. Les, let's switch over to the New Orleans Saints. Free agency is still going on. Where do we stand with the Jarrett Cook situation?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think anybody knows. It's been very quiet from both the Jarrett Cook camp as well as his suitors, which include the New Orleans Saints. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing for the Saints. I mean, it looks on social media like a lot of Saints fans are getting antsy, and understandably so, because he'd be such a significant addition if they were able to sign him. But the fact that he hasn't chosen to go elsewhere tells me that nobody has made a substantially better offer than the Saints have made. So I think they're in the mix. He's taking his time for whatever reason. I don't know if he's hoping that somebody else comes along and makes a better offer, or if he's just being thorough in making his decision. But I think the Saints were serious when they brought him in to meet with him, and I think they made a competitive offer, and he has not chosen anyone else to this point. So I think the Saints are still in the thick of it and have a chance to sign him. But when he ultimately makes that decision, I don't know. This free agency has moved pretty quickly for most people, but for some reason he's taking his time. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing for the Saints.
And Les, we'll wrap it up with this, brother, before letting you go. Any maybe small deals that you're hearing about, any other kind of maybe mid-level free agents that the Saints are bringing in that they're looking at possibly trying to sign?
No, I haven't heard anything new coming in. I'm sure they're still looking around. It's going to probably have to be an economics-driven signing. Anyone else they bring in, and beyond the possibility of Cook, you know, there's still some places they can look. Tight end, certainly, if Cook doesn't sign, is going to be one of those places. They've addressed both lines of scrimmage, but I think offensive line especially are areas they could still look at. Certainly wide receiver and the secondary are also on the radar. And, of course, they're limited in what they can do in the draft. So I think they're still looking to bring in a couple of mid- to lower-level price-wise free agents. But I don't have any names for you at the moment.
Les, I appreciate you waking up early for us, brother. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Okay, thanks, Raymond.
That's Les East breaking down some New Orleans Pelicans and Saints talk for us here on The Wrap Game. When we return here on a special edition broadcasting live from Lowell Triomphe for the Chittimacha, Louisiana Open presented by Mistras, we're going to break down this field. It's a star-studded field. There's some big names that are here. Some former big-time PGA Tour winners are in the field this week. We're going to look at that, break that down when we come back here on The Wrap Game with RP3, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to The Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, broadcasting live here from La Triomphe for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras. The tournament starts off next. It starts off tomorrow. The Pro-Am is currently going on right now, or they're heading out to the course to start that. But the tournament, the four-day event, will start technically tomorrow. But we're going to dive a little bit deeper into that field in next segment, because right now we are being privileged to have a professional official with the PGA Tour. He's been doing it for more than a dozen years, Tom Hearn. Tom, welcome to the show, and thank you for making some time for us.
Thank you. Privilege. I think you just being nice, I think you just run out of other guests, right?
No, not at all, not at all. I appreciate you making some time for us, and I definitely wanted to kind of get a different perspective. We had our good friend Danny Jones on yesterday, telling us about the tournament and everything that it does here for the community. But I wanted to get a different perspective in your role. Give us a little bit of your background. How did you get into becoming an official for the PGA Tour? How did that happen?
Well, I actually used to play professionally. Played in this event a couple times back in the mid-90s, and eventually figured out that I wasn't quite good enough to stick out here, and wound up going to work for the Nebraska PGA as tournament director and assistant executive director, and that for after 8 years of that led into this position with the tour.
How much of a difference is it? How much is it an asset, Tom, from you being a former player to becoming an official? Do you think that's a necessary requirement to be a good, effective official for the PGA Tour?
Definitely not necessary, but there are benefits. I think just the respect from the players that if they know that I've been in their shoes before and vice versa, I know what they're going through. I know it's tough being on the road, trying to make a living at this level. And I think it's a benefit. I know I kind of know what kind of feelings they're going through sometimes when they're down. They might have missed three or four cuts in a row, and they might be a little grumpy. Or sometimes I might be a little grumpy being on the road 3 or 4 weeks in a row too. So it goes both ways. But, yeah, I think it helps a little bit, but definitely not. We've got some very quality officials on our staff. We've got a great staff. And I'm the only one that really comes from a professional playing background. We all play, but, yeah, it helps a little bit.
So, Tom, tell me a little bit, how large is the staff? How many officials are going to be out here for this for this four-day event, walking the course and working behind the scenes? How big is your staff?
We've got a total of 11 of us. But there's 8 of us here this week. 7 of us on the regular rule staff are here, and then we've got a guest official from the LPGA Tour, Pete Liss, is with us this week too.
So what is your role then in this, and what do you do? Are you the one that's organizing all the officials, or are you walking the course as well? What's your role this? Because I know you said off the air when we were talking before that you actually came here last week and everything like that. So what's your role every day for the rounds of golf?
Yeah, I'm considered the advance official here, which means I get in a full week prior to tournament week, and I'm here to work with Danny Jones and his crew to help A to Z, everything. Has helped set up the locker room, organize where certain structures are going to go, answer any questions that he might have as it relates to the competition, help organize the pro-am, work with the field changes, really kind of an event planner when you're the advance official. And then once the bell rings Thursday morning, I put on my more of a traditional rules officiating hat, and I'll be out there giving rulings and watching pace of play.
I would assume we're talking to Tom Hearn, PGA Tour official. Tom, I would assume to be effective in your job, you have to be pretty even-keeled. You mentioned about being grumpy and about being on the road, but you're dealing with athletes and competitors, and they can get emotional at times. How disciplined do you have to be not to let your own emotions kind of overtaking yourself when you have someone that's kind of jawing or is upset about a call?
Yeah, I mean, that happens. I mean, that's going to happen in any walk of life, though. I mean, no matter what you do, you're gonna run across people that have had a tough morning, whether it be trouble at home. They might have a sick kid at home, or who knows what's going on in their life, you got to let it run off your back. And 9 times out of 10, if somebody has been grumpy, they'll come later in the day or the next day and say, "Hey, sorry, I was grumpy with you yesterday." You know,
right.
So no, it's all good. It happens. And like I say, it goes vice versa. Sometimes I might be a little grumpy. So,
Tom, give me some highlights, some of the bigger tournaments that you've been able to work as an official.
Well, I do most of my work on the Web.com Tour. We work 3 or 4 PGA Tour events a year because our schedule is not as long as the PGA Tour schedule is. So we fill in out there some. I've worked, Pebble Beach and, L.A. Anthony Genesis and events like that. But, heck, it's fun being on this tour. It's a family atmosphere out here. It's more of a little bit of a traveling circus, and kind of we band together out here. It's not quite as big of a business out here as it is on the PGA Tour, and you kind of get to know the guys a little bit better and their family. So glad to be here.
Have they fed you the right way?
Oh, yeah, man. You can't go wrong here with food. It's hard not gain a whole lot of weight when you're here for 2 weeks. So, no, that's great.
Well, that would explain my size, Tom. That would explain.
Well, I'm going to go there.
Tom, I appreciate you making some time for us, brother. I know you're busy. Tom Hearn, PGA Tour rules official, joining us here on the Wrap Game. We'll come back. We'll take a look at the Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras Field. It's star-studded. We'll dive right into it right here on the Wrap Game with RP3, broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parsh III, and we are broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in lovely Broussard. This is the site of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras. The field is star-studded, ladies and gentlemen. And if you want to see some guys that are going to be making it up to the PGA Tour either this season or next season, or guys that have already been stars on the tour, this is the perfect tournament for you. I remember a few years back, I was out here covering, and they had one of the Bryan brothers, Wesley Bryan. He actually won the tournament, but he was known, him and his brother were known, they're out of Texas, known for their trick shot videos where they would hit a golf ball, bounce it, hit it, and then knock it through a basketball goal, or in all these different type of trick videos. And that's what he was known for. But Wesley came out here and actually won his first professional career tournament right here at the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. And then went on to go on to the PGA Tour. He was actually the Web.com Tour Player of the Year that year. So it's a great spot for guys coming up, getting their PGA Tour card, and then making it onto the bigger stage. And it's also a chance for guys maybe looking to continue their golf career and maybe get it back on track. And we have a combination of that this year for this field. We'll have three former Louisiana Open champions in the field. And we have one of only two of the two-time winners in tournament history, Casey Wittenberg, whose family actually has roots here in the state of Louisiana. He won the event in 2012 and then won it again in 2017. He set the tournament scoring record both of those years. So he's back in the field. He's familiar with this. He knows how to attack the course. He talked about it yesterday during the press conference held here behind the 18th hole, how he knows how to deal with the wind. Because the wind here, and if you're not familiar with this tournament, the wind can wreak havoc on a round of golf. I've seen guys have 3, 4, 5-shot leads, and it gets evaporated like that due to the crosswinds out here on the course, in particular on the back nine where holes 12, 13, 14, and 15 present some of the biggest challenges for the competitors. But Casey knows how to manage that, okay? He's played this course numerous times. He's a two-time champion. I'd expect big things from him. But he's not the only previous Chittimacha Louisiana Open champion in the field. Fabian Gomez, who won the title in 2010, he's back as well. And the big lefty, Edward Lohr, who won it in 2013. They're both going to be in the field as well. Now, that's not the only ones. You're looking for a guy who's won a major? They got that as well, ladies and gentlemen. Mike Weir, one of the most successful golfers in Canadian history, who has posted 8 wins on the PGA Tour. He also won the Masters. That's right. He slipped on the green jacket back in 2003, and this gentleman's earned more than $22 million on the PGA Tour. He's playing in several Web.com Tour events this year as part of an eligibility category that's now allowing former PGA Tour members that are age 48 to 49, very small percentage, to prepare for the PGA Champions Tour, which you have to be the age of 50 to get on that. And they have their own big tour with multiple majors as well. So this is kind of an interesting thing, but a smart move by the Web.com Tour is having this transition period, big name guys, guys that have name recognition. A guy like Mike Weir, who we all know who follows golf, is a Masters champion. to come and play on the web.com tour, make the transition then to the Champions Tour. But Mike will be here making his first appearance in Acadiana as this year's field. But he's not the only big name in this weekend's tournament. Boo Weekly, first of all, terrific name. Name Hall of Famer right there. Boo Weekly, you remember he burst onto the national and international golf scene. He is a three-time PGA Tour champion. And if you remember, he made his bones, so to speak, on the 2008 U.S. Ryder Cup team. He became a household name with that. He's 45 years old, so he's kind of at the tail end of his career on the PGA Tour. He'll be making that transition here in a few years to the Champions Tour, but Boo is going to be in the field. He's actually working his way back, ladies and gentlemen, from medical issues. In 2013, he had elbow surgery, which kind of shut him down, and then last year he had a cancer scare. So Boo is trying to get back to form. He still has that window to compete on the PGA Tour, but he's going to be here in the field as well, bouncing back after having, once again, elbow surgery in 2017 and a cancer scare last year. You know, Danny talked about this on the show yesterday, Danny Jones, the Chittimacha Louisiana Open executive director. You know, he said, quote, you know, when you have name recognition, it always brings more interest to the tournament. One of the most popular events we had was when John Daly played here in 2013 and Larry Mize, that's the 1987 Masters champion, was a wonderful addition to the field the year he played here as well. But look, there's excitement going about Mike Weir, recent Masters champion, Boo Weekly, a star from the Ryder Cup, but they're both going to be in the field. The field is huge. 144 players are in this year's field. They're all aiming for the purse of $550,000, including $99,000 to whoever is crowned the 28th champion of the Web.com Tour's sixth stop on its schedule. Now, Cody, I know you've told me off the air, brother, that you do not follow golf that closely, and you don't really know the ins and outs of it, but I just told you that the winner of this tournament can win nearly $100,000. Does that make you want to go out and buy a set of golf clubs and learn the game of golf?
It does, especially considering that just across the river there, other side of the basin, Top Golf is now a thing. I can hit that up. I can practice there while also having my delicious Moscow Mule at the same time. So it's a win-win situation.
Win-win situation. I love how you threw the food in there.
I thought you were about to ask me something about this and this, about golf and this, and I was going to like literally have to just hit you with the no inglés. No inglés. No, I don't know. I mean, golf is one of those things to where I've played it a handful of times with, you know, just some buddies in high school and whatnot, because there is a Falls River Country Club in the New Roads area where there's a golf course and stuff. So right near my house is a nice golf course, you know. So I've played there a handful of times. I've gone to Top Golf. I've hit on a real driving range. I am not good at golf, but it's very fun. It's one of those things that where if you don't like watching golf, if it's that doesn't tickle your fancies, if it's like, oh, it's not enough going to pick up a golf club and then just go hit a ball around. It doesn't matter if it's in your backyard or whatever. And you'll find that it's a lot more fun to be interactive with and be in the place. Even if you're not playing, if you show up at Le Triomphe and you go to the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, then it's going to give you a much better experience than watching on TV.
Oh, exactly. I also say that it can give you a great amount of joy, and it's also one of the most frustrating things you will ever do in your life. I love to golf. I haven't picked up my clubs in a while. The last time I did, I went to a driving range with my brother-in-law. But let me tell you, have there been times where I have maybe acted poorly on the golf course, Cody?
Colors, Raymond. True colors.
Oh, man, I get so frustrated on the course, brother.
So are you a hook or a slice? What's the issue here?
Dude, I do
all of the above.
I do both. I am one of the world's worst golfers. I'll give you a story. I was actually on my high school golf team. for 1 year. A couple that of my sentence, good buddies.
That sentence should not follow the "I'm one of the world's worst golfers." Like, you can't say that and then follow it up with, like, "I was on the high school golf team."
Oh, but wait. So my buddies convinced me, a couple of my buddies, they were really into golf. They grew up with it. I never had picked up a golf club, and I'm not counting the putter that I used to use when I go to putt-putt golf, right?
It's,
okay?
It's fun, though.
So, yeah, it's one thing hitting an orange golf ball through a windmill in a koala bear or whatever was on there, you know. So they convinced me to go out, and I had the golf shirt and everything, and we go to the, you know, go out there, and there was 18 of us on that team my junior year in high school. Your boy was number 17 out of 18 on the team, and the only reason why I wasn't dead last is because the last guy was handicapped.
Oh.
Yes, that's right. That's how terrible I was. But I love the game. I love it. I love going to play. I play with my buddies. A lot of times we'll have a guy's weekend and we'll take out the clubs and go out there and play. My greatest golf moment, I was living in Beaumont. Mm-hmm. I was playing with a few guys at work. I had by far the worst day, a worst round of golf. I mean, it was well over 100 and it was only 18 holes, Cody. Okay. So that puts things in perspective. It was terrible. I was cursing. I was yelling. I was disgusted. I couldn't wait. I absolutely could not wait to get that round of golf done and be done with it and just go home. 18th hole. I hit a decent approach shot. By the way, I can barely use a driver. I have to use a driving iron because I look like I'm having a seizure every time I use a driver.
Lord.
So I hit a great tee shot. I mean, like 200 yards, like one of the longest tee shots I've ever hit. And I'm like, here we go. All right, going to finish strong. Going to finish strong. My approach shot, though, it's a par four. My approach shot sails over. Like, I just hit it with a four iron like a big moron. It just goes right over. It just sails right over the green. And it's an elevated green. And the backside rolls down to a cart path. And I am just cursing like it's nobody's business. And I go over there, and my ball is on the other side of the cart path. It's not out of bounds, but it's on the other side of the cart path. And I'm thinking, well, so much for me even making par on this hole. I'm going to just be terrible. And I just sat there, and I looked over my ball, and I said, whatever, what the hell. And I hit it, got my wedge out and hit it. And it bounced, it skipped up around the green, and it rolled. And I couldn't see what happened. And the guys in my group, my buddies from work, start cheering and yelling. And I run up the hill. And you've never seen a 300-pound man run so fast, Cody.
Uphill.
And I run up the hill. And I'm like, did that go in? Did that go in? And I look in, and I had holed it in for a birdie.
Come
That's
on.
Right. Yes. It was the greatest moment of my golfing life. And I had shot over 100 that day on just 18 holes. But everything was saved. Because I hold in that birdie right there on the number 18. I kept the golf ball, and then I thought I was going to do really well the next time I went out and golfed, and I was even worse. So that's what it is. It tricks you. It tricks you. The game tricks you, Cody, because it frustrates you, and you're like, you want to give up, and then it gives you that sliver of hope, and it's like, oh, no, this game's beautiful. You love this game. You want to play this game more. You can't get away from it. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to work on this. I'm going to go to the range. I'm going to do so much better the next time I play golf. And then it goes out there and slaps you across the face.
Not so fast.
So all these guys that are in the field this week for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistros, bravo.
Right.
I just they're out there grinding it. These guys are pros, and this is the hardest game on the face of the planet. And I give it up to these guys for being out here. But look, if you haven't got your tickets yet, you can still get tickets out here for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. It's a star-studded field once again. Former Masters champ Mike Weir is out here. Ryder Cup star Boo Weekly is going to be out here. In addition, we'll have winners on this year's tour already. Rafael Campos, who captured the Bahamas Great Classic, he'll be in the field. Michael Gillick, who won the Panama Championship, he'll be here as well. So come out here. Tickets are extremely affordable. You will have a terrific time. They do it best. Look, I've covered the Shell Houston Open on the PGA Tour. This is comparable how they put it on here, the hospitality, everything. It's not blowing smoke, ladies and gentlemen. Danny Jones is right when he was on the show yesterday. It is the real deal. So make sure to come out here this weekend and get to see some terrific professional golf. When we come back, we will wrap things up here on The Wrap Game, broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in lovely Broussard on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. Just a reminder, guys, that this Thursday, LSU tips off its March Madness run against Yale at 11:40 a.m. And 103.7 The Game is hosting a big dance watch party at Twin Peaks on Johnston with yours truly, RP3. The Thursday special is going to be buy six wings, get six more for free. Also, you know Twin Peaks has got you covered with beer at a teeth-chattering 29 degrees. So come join me, RP3, and 103.7 The Game to watch LSU take on Yale at Twin Peaks on Johnston. It will be a good time, and I promise that I will be on my best behavior. Cody, do you think I will be on my best behavior?
Eats, drinks, scenic views.
There we go. There we go. So make sure to join me tomorrow. I want to thank everyone that came on today. It was a jam-packed show. I want
you're
to thank
welcome,
Ron Higgins.
You're welcome for me coming on today, Ray. It has been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Hey, without you, brother, this ship sinks real quick. Like, okay,
is it cold in the trailer again today?
No, it's nice and toasty, right? It's nice and balmy in here. I don't know what you're talking about. I want to thank, first of all, gentlemen. Thank you. I want to thank Cody Schutz for manning the ones and twos like always that back there in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. I do want to thank Ron Higgins from Tiger Details helping us break down LSU men's basketball. I also want to thank UNO head men's basketball coach Mark Schlesinger for talking about his team season as well as giving us a little bit of a preview of their game tonight versus Texas Southern, which is coached by, of course, LSU, Johnny Jones. Also, want to thank Les East from CrescentCitySports.com for coming on, breaking down New Orleans Pelicans, Elfrid Payton, that torrid pace that he's on with the triple-doubles and whether or not he'll come back. And also, a big shout-out for Tom Hearn, PGA Tour rules official. He's working the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. He came by, gave us a little bit about his background, and I'm hoping for him that no one is grumpy, as he talked about. Look, that's a tough job to deal with. You have to penalize a guy for doing something illegal. They're going to get a tad emotional, especially when there's a big payday on the line. And a lot of these guys that are out here golfing, a lot of these guys are grinders. You know, they're making it from tournament to tournament. A lot of times they have to qualify from tournament to tournament. So any money they make kind of keeps that going, kind of keeps the tires on the car, helps pay for oil changes and everything else like that. So you can imagine things get a little emotional for these guys. Tom gave us some insight there, and we appreciate him stopping by. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live once again here from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras. We got Dan McDonald, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. He's going to join us, talk about the tournament. He's also going to talk about that terrific moment he had last weekend with Yvette Gerard when the field there at Lampson Park was named after her. We'll also have Amy Just from the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. She's going to be in Jacksonville. She's there going to be covering the LSU men's basketball game versus Yale. So we'll get a report from her as well. Plus, much, much more. So make sure to tune in tomorrow for the show. And once again, I can't say it enough. Come out here. Look, I had never been out here. The first time I came out here was 4 years ago. I was immensely impressed by the tournament. And you will have fun. Trust me on this. The food is terrific out here. And once again, you get to see some top-notch golfers. This is not one of the lower-tier tours. This is the Web.com tour. This is the feeder tour for the PGA Tour. I already talked to you about Wesley Bryan, who won here before. Other guys have won here. Smiley Kaufman has played in here. Sam Burns LSU star, was in this field last year, and he was able to build off of that momentum and got up to the PGA Tour, and now he's playing on the big tour. So you're going to see guys that are trying to make their way to the big tour, and you get to also see some former champions that are maybe transitioning to the Champions Tour, like Mike Weir, a Masters champion, like Boo Weekly, a Ryder Cup star. So come, check it out. It starts tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. First round action will start at 7:30. The first group will tee off then, and they will go all day. They will go until it's dark out here. So trust me, your ticket that you're going to buy, it's going to be well worth the money. You're going to get your money's worth. You can stay out here all day and catch golf from morning to noon till night. Same thing for Friday as well. And then the field will be cut down to the low 65 following the second round. And then third round on Saturday, and the championship final round will be on Sunday. So make sure to come out. Trust me, you have RP3's word that you will enjoy yourself. It's beautiful weather, terrific golf, wonderful food. You can't beat it. Where else would you want to be? Trust me on this. Y'all stay safe out there today. Be bundled up. It's a little chilly. And we will talk to you tomorrow here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers.